And so we said, okay, fool pool is nice. We are a pool of fools. We hear a lot of what's not allowed to do. And we said, okay, let's do it. But in the first message is have a good time, laugh with us, and just watch. We are artists. We have ideas, but every idea need time to grow. And an idea can't grow when you're always busy. Fear is a very bad thing. If you fear if it's good or not, you're already lost. We believe in ourselves. We believe it works.
Really, thanks a lot for taking the time. Mm-hmm. Just for a little bit of context, I'm not sure if we met exactly. I think I met your colleague, Armin.
Yes.
At the Future of Festivals conference a few months ago here in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And I really thought your booth was interesting, and you had some very interesting performances. And I think it would be very cool to chat with you a little bit about who you are and what you do, mm-hmm. and what are all of these performances about. So again, yeah, thank you for taking the time.
Okay. Welcome. Where are you now?
I'm in Berlin.
In Berlin? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Berlin. That's where I live.
Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm. So the thing I would really like to ask you for a start is, since you're doing so many interesting things and performances for so long, what is something that we need to understand, let's say, from your life or your childhood, so that you become this performer? What do we need to know about it?
Oh, this is very, very simple. I start with 12, juggling, became a juggler, start dancing on the wire, became a wire dancer, went to the circus, did some years circus, and then I start with friends who I know very long. We start a performance group. The basics came out of the school. They start performances in the school and finance their studies with performances. And after the study, we thought, okay, how we are going on? Are we going on just little bit by little, or are we doing this professional? And we thought, okay, let's do it professional. We have many ideas. We have fun to work hard also, and let's start. And this happens over 30 years ago. So we are over 30 years professional artists in different genres. That's how Fool Pool was going on. Exactly. And we are still the same people. We are four people from beginning on. Okay, three people, and I came 25 years ago to the other three. So I am the youngest. And but we are still the same group, and we are good friends. I think that's why we still exist.
So you went to school together, all of you, yes. If I understood correctly.
Yeah. That's what we did, exactly.
And so you went to primary school when you were still kids, or already when you were students?
On the gymnasium, on the college school.
Okay, yes. So somewhere in the middle. Can you tell a little bit more about the circus experience, and where did you travel? How was that for you?
The circus was very interesting, and it was really lucky, because I had a friend who works in the circus. It was in Flick Flack, and mm-hmm. Flick Flack at this time, it was in the beginning of the 90s. They did many new shows without animals, modern circus art. And they were looking for artists who can do something at their own ideas. So I joined them, and we made, I guess, three or four different numbers. And I met other artists. I practiced, trained with the artists. So, for example, I met Didier Antoine, who was working in Cirque du Soleil as a trainer And as an artist, I learned much from him. Salto, somersault, all the things, handstand. I met Freddy Nock, very famous wire artist. We worked together. And so slowly for slowly, I become more and more an artist, a circus artist. So I worked in Flick Flack, for example. I worked with the Nock family. I worked sometimes also Roncalli. Was also very interesting. But after some years, I quit completely. All my circus
life. Why?
Why? Because I didn't want to travel alone. It's fantastic to work in the circus, but I had really good friends I want to work with, as Max, as Armin, as Clemens, as Marcus, our group. There was a great friendship in Fool Pool, and we said, okay, let's work together. So I stopped all the circus. I didn't have to travel alone. I had to travel alone. And it's good. And there's a really very important thing about Fool Pool. We are very different characters, really different. We have one who can write very good, one who can very many ideas without end. When we brainstorm, he is talking always new ideas. We have Max who can build, for example, the herd of mechanical creatures. I do the booking. I'm very good in, I wouldn't say communicate, but in managing, in organizing on the computer. So we are very different characters, but we are together. We are a team, And that's why we had to work together.
And where did you get the name from? Whose idea was this?
It was Clemens' idea. We brainstormed for new ideas. We had Biftiki Boys. We have really shit names. Sorry for the name. But it was in the middle of the 90s where we changed the name. Before, we had a Bavarian name, a German name, Beknackte Körper. Do you know?
Okay, and what does that mean in English?
Do you know the show of André Heller, Begnadete Körper? It means very nice bodies who can do nice things. And we change the name a little bit from Begnadet to Beknackt. And Beknackt means stupid.
Okay.
So we called ourselves kind of stupid bodies. It's a word game. And we traveled with this name many years, but it's old style. So we need a new name. And in the middle of the 90s, English names were not very common. So now I think many companies has English names, many German companies. And so we said, okay, Fool Pool is nice. We are a pool of fools. Fits, perfect match. Okay, let's do it. And then we start to go on with commercial things, not commercial things, how to do socializing, making new contacts, go on fairs, and to go outside of our little world, outside of Bavaria, outside of Germany, outside of Europe. And so step by step, getting better, getting more contacts. And now here we are.
And what's like one funny story from your beginning? Let's say the first show that you did outside of your hometown, or let's say even the country.
For example, we've been to Japan in the beginning of our career. And this was very new for us to work in a foreign country with a different culture. And people come, tell us what we can do and what not. So, for example, they say, okay, don't touch people. Don't come too close. Don't be too loud. Don't go in shops. So we hear a lot of what's not allowed to do. And we said, okay, this will kill all our performance. Okay, let's do it as we do, because we are artists. And it was not a business event. It was a real cultural event. It was a festival, a big festival, Daidogai in Shizuoka, if you know this festival. And it was great. The people laugh and laugh and laugh, took many pictures of us, and we got in contact, and we have still fans. We are artists. We are not rock stars, of course. So it's very unusual to have real fans, but we have very nice fans, and we are still in contact with Japan. So that's one of the beginning stories. And every country is different. The only thing you need to know what is a no-go. So, for example, when we are working in the Far East, Asia, there's a no-go: don't touch heads, for example. But it's
okay. Interesting.
Yeah, but it's no problem to get close to the people to do our kind of contact, but no touching heads. But that's easy.
And are there any other, let's say, different types or rules that you need to adapt your performance for anywhere else in the world? You mentioned Asia. How about in Europe? What are some of the different reactions to the same performances in people?
Normally not, because we like to make the people laugh, to have a break in their normal life. And laughing is absolutely without borders. Laughing is great. Laughing is easy. And then in the second few, there's a little message what we say. But in the first message is have a good time, laugh with us, chill, relax, and just watch. Sometimes it must be easy. Of course, there's a difference in the acts. I mean, we have very simple acts, and we have, I wouldn't say complicated acts, but we have acts with a real message. So it depends on the act. And of course, when we go, you met us in Berlin at the Future Festival, and we were there with Happy Waiting. Happy Waiting is an act with a real message. And when the people go to Happy Waiting, they call a phone number and they get in a hotline, and the hotline needs the language of the country. Of course, so we have it in English and French, but we can make it in every country language. But yeah.
Yeah, so I also wanted to go through some of your performances and maybe okay. Ask you about what the philosophy behind it is. I wanted to go through that a little bit later, but since you started, we can okay. Absolutely go into it right now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, tell us a little bit about what's the philosophy behind Happy Waiting.
Happy Waiting, we want to give the people a break from the life. Stop and smile. We are living in a very fast way. Waiting is a bad thing. People wait everywhere. They're waiting at a bus stop. They're waiting to buy tickets. They're waiting for the entrance. But the people don't want to wait. But waiting is also a gift. We are artists. We have ideas, but every idea need time to grow. But an idea can't grow when you're always busy. Some big companies know when they're employed always working, always sitting. They need a stopping time. They need a brainstorming time. They need a creative time. We call it kiss the muse. Do you know this word, kiss the muse?
I heard a little bit about this muses term and how you can be creative and that you need to.
You need to give the chance to be kissed, and this can only be when you're stopping. When you have a stop, and that's what we do at Happy Waiting. We have a place where we have a bus stop. The people go there where they dial a number, a real telephone number. They get into a hotline menu with the philosophy and ideas and topics about waiting. And you can talk to your own waiting consultant. So there's also a real person behind, and you talk with them about whatever you want. And after you sit in, you sit on a bench, you sit on a chair, you write a postcard to yourself, and we deliver the postcard after 3, 6, or 12 months. So you wait also to get the postcards. And it's always, it's a stop in our busy time. It's a relaxing zone. It's a chill out zone. That's why we created Happy Waiting.
And how do you balance this then, let's say, in your life, the part when you need to be still and do nothing and let your creativity come in, and the part when you need to be, you know, busy making calls, doing schedules? How is this for you in your real life?
In my life, I have two things to do it. I do sport. I go jogging. I go biking. I do paddling, stand up paddling, and that's my off time. And I do Alexander Technique. Alexander Technique. Do you know this? Have you ever heard of it?
No. Okay. Alexander Technique.
Alexander Technique. It came from England, and it's a technique to stop yourself and to go away from all behaviors what is not good for you. In Germany, for example, it's a part of acting and musician studies. For example, when you are studying violin and you practice 10, 12, 15 hours a day, your body will hurt. And with Alexander Technique, you know your body as well that you can fix yourself.
So it's what, like a resting technique, or
it's a kind,
is it more physically focused?
It's a kind of resting technique. The first sentence you do is stop what you do and think about it. That's the first thing, because normally we're doing things too fast or in a wrong way. When we sit down, when we stand up, and it's not Alexander Technique don't tell you how to do it, but it tell you not, it tell you to do all, to leave the wrong things away. And when you leave the wrong things away, you do the good things. It's not a philosophy, it's a day balance. So also, when I talk to somebody, I try to stop first, to think about, and stop and smile. That's the philosophy I found for myself.
Or smile and wave.
Yes.
Do you also do some meditation? Because this comes really hand in hand,
no.
I believe.
No, I don't. No.
This is maybe then the next step, the art of doing completely nothing.
I think there are many, I know many people who do this, but I think I have my adrenaline kick when I do my sport. That's enough. That's my kind of meditation.
Yeah. And what about the gentleman act? What's the story there? Because from what I saw, it's gentlemen who are quiet. Can you tell a little bit more about them?
The gentleman is also one of our first new acts when we found the new company. we are playing no talking man. We are playing real man. It's a parody. What are men? A man are strong. Men have many muscles. Men don't talk much. Men don't smile. Men don't cry. And we make a parody out of all. We don't talk. And normally we don't act much. We move very slow, and the people come with an idea to us. For example, a man come and say, "Wow, you are really big. I want to also be very big." And I show him a small card, and on the card there's my face with a bodybuilder body. And then I gave him some pills, and he need to eat the pills to become strong. It's comedy, of course, always. Or a woman come and said, "Oh, you're so nice." And I take a rose in my mouth, and I dance with her without words, just a very slow dancing. So we are doing almost nothing, very, very small bits of acting. And this is very funny. And it took a time to get to know what we do with the gentleman. And the best thing is to do nothing first, to wait, to look what is the public thinking, and then we act. We've been also to Japan with this act. And when we had a place and start doing nothing, a big crowd waiting around. We played 500-600 people around us, like a circus show. And it's not meant as a circus show. It's meant as mobile theater, as a walking act. So we go from one place to another and play small bits. But in Japan, we made a kind of circus show, just of doing nothing and improvisation. And it was really funny.
And what are some of the elements of a show that you can, let's say, predict or unpredict that they are gonna be funny? Because, for example, you also do some circus shows when there's a lot of moving, a lot of, let's say, music, a lot of elements, a lot of moving parts. And let's say with the gentleman, you're basically more or less standing still, very little facial expression from what I saw on the videos, and still it can be hilarious. How do you recognize some elements that are funny in a performance?
I think it's a mixture between thinking, writing, thinking what you do, and improvisation. And we did so many shows now, over 30 years experience, that we have a big base of what is allowed, what works and what does not work. And the main thing, you don't have to be fear is a very bad thing. If you feared if it's good or not, you're already lost. We believe in ourselves. We believe when we, for example, gentlemen, when we do nothing, we believe it works. And in our other shows, for example, the circus show, it's a mixture between technique, juggling technique, artistic technique, what works combined with funny jokes. And this is also a great base of jokes, a great base of improvisation, and find out what goes and what doesn't work.
So it's more a trial and error process. You're trying different things and then you see what works, what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have you ever been surprised? Let's say you are developing a new idea, a new performance or a new concept. And then you think, okay, this is going to be so funny. But then you try it in person and then nobody laughs. Or for example, you do something unexpected and everybody is laughing.
Yes. For example, we create a new show 10 years ago called The Service Superheroes. And it was a political program about the service in our time. because we are living in a kind of service desert. You know what it means? Service desert. Your phone doesn't work. You call your provider, Telekom, O2, whatever, and you get lost in a hotline. Press the 1 for this, press the 2 for this, press the 3 for that, and you're waiting, in a bad way.
Yeah.
To get a real person that you help. So you are in a service desert. Doesn't matter what you want. And we make a parody out of this. So we create superheroes, and we had so many ideas about wrapping a person in a plastic type, about splashing the public with water to bring them water if it's hot and thirsty. And this program we developed in rehearsal studio, and then we go out for the first time, had premiere, and half of our jokes didn't work. But this was also funny. Funny in a way of jokes doesn't work because there was no experience. So we said, okay, of course, we have to go out. So we found a lot of jobs where we can try out. And after 30 shows, we get a balance between what we can do and what we can't do. For example, we give a small, how do you call it, drinking, where you can drink?
Yeah, a glass or a
yeah,
can.
Yeah, glass, plastic glasses we give out to the public.
Okay.
And to bring them water to drink. It was very hot. But we didn't fill it with in the normal way. We fill it like smashing water around. The people laugh, but the circle break completely, of course. Nobody want to get wet, even it was still hot. And when you break a circle, it's very hard to get the circle back. So we had to find a way how to smash the people with water and not to break the circle.
So the circle, just so I understand correctly, it was the audience.
Yes,
around
exactly. Yeah.
Your performance.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Exactly. And this is only learning by doing.
So because I saw these service providers, your performance. I saw it on the PDF and on your website, but I didn't quite understand what it is. So yeah, thanks for explaining, because I also sometimes get lost in the hotline.
Yes.
Of press 1, press 2, of calling, you know, these institutions.
Exactly. Yes. And so every program has a different character, like the gentleman, man's parody, like the Quasler, the aliens, alien tourists coming out out of space, the caveman, very funny, one of my funniest act, because you can do almost everything. We are stopped with the caveman. We are only stopped by Corona. Before Corona, we can do really jokes who going over the border sometimes. So if but now after Corona, the people you need to get more aware of what is allowed and what not.
Okay, so you had like a real effect.
Exactly. Yes.
Not actually in just performing or not, but actually in how people react.
Yes, how people react and how close you come to the people. So with the cavemen, sometimes they take somebody, man or women, over the shoulder and run and shout, yeah! directly after Corona, we couldn't take somebody because the people were afraid of the the I don't know how to explain. We couldn't come so near to the people.
About getting infected.
And touching was not allowed, for example. So this was a complete new situation for the cavemen who work very close, who hug, for example, from both sides. Two cavemen came left and right and give a big hug, for example. And before Corona, the people love it to be hugged. It's a kind of love act to hug somebody in a friendly way, of course. And after Corona, it was not possible to hug somebody. So now we are coming closer and closer. So I think I think in some years we will forget this. I hope so.
So there's an effect even now. What is it? Three years later, something like that?
Yeah.
People are still affected by that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in person.
It is. It is, really.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And on a little bit more philosophical way, why do you think something is funny to us? Why do we laugh? Let's say the gentlemen, they are standing still and we are laughing. Why do we find this funny?
Okay, this is... I hope that you don't ask me this. This is a very...
There's no right or wrong answer. It's just what you think.
I think you laugh when something unexpected happens. And we, in the comedians, or also we are not comedians, we work with unexpected things. So when you see the gentleman, you see a guy who don't laugh, who's very, very serious. And you don't expect that he's dancing with you. You don't expect he goes a little way with you. He take care of you. You don't expect that he don't laugh. Many people want to bring us to laugh. They're standing in front of and making jokes or making gestures, but we don't laugh normally in 99.9%.
You are also human, so.
Yeah, of course. If a band is playing, the gentlemen come and just stand still and go a little bit, move a little bit. So in every comedy situation, we do unexpected things, and that's funny.
Because I think there also has to be some other elements, because if we look at life, there can also be some unexpected things which are not pleasant. Mm-hmm. And let's say we don't laugh. So in comedy, there has to be maybe some other elements, mm-hmm, as well, or maybe directing the audience to expecting something and then something different happens. Mm-hmm. Not, let's say, unexpected from out of the blue, but different to the expectations. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? If it makes sense?
Yeah, it makes absolutely sense. For example, in our comedy show, we have a volunteer placed. We are placing the volunteer in the middle, and we are juggling around him or her. And we said, "Oh no, it's not so easy. We have a security suit." So we bring out the security suit, a helmet, and everybody is thinking, of course, this is for the volunteer. We are explaining that, and what we are doing, we putting this on, for example, and the people laugh about it because they didn't expect. Of course, they expect it's for the volunteer. Or then we have clubs. We said, oh no, it's not dangerous enough. Then we're taking out juggling knives. They didn't expect. So
you juggle with knives?
We juggle with knives also, yes. So we said, oh, it's very dangerous. And street juggling performances jokes.
Has there ever been a moment where performance didn't go as planned? Were there ever some accidents where you need to interfere?
No accidents. And no. Normally not. Sometimes the volunteers don't want to come to the stage, but that's normal. You start looking for volunteers from the beginning of the show, sometimes before the show. That's no problem. And this is also a kind of competence you need as a performer. So who you like, who you need and who you don't need. So, and oh, there's one thing I have to tell you with the superheroes.
We have
a special service when we perform. It's a act, kind of slapstick act. The volunteer sits on it and he become a new kind of hair. And we have foam. He becomes foam in the hair and a shirt, skin in front of him. And we put a peruke, a new hair over him. It's a kind of little magic show. So when we are ready with him, it takes 2 or 3 minutes, he has new hair. He's looking very great. And there was a man in the public. He was really perfect. He was laughing at the other jokes right from the beginning. So we took him for this part as a volunteer. But what we didn't know, he had a hair transplantation before. You couldn't know that. So when we start with the foam and touching his head, he become absolutely panic. So we couldn't go on. And this part is made with music. So we had to stop. We had to leave him. We had to look for a new volunteer. And this crashed the show a little bit. But of course, we have enough experience to manage it. But I was, oh no, he had a hair transplantation. How could you know that? We had 300.
So that's how you managed it.
We managed it, but it was not easy. Because he was afraid. He was afraid. And normally our volunteers are people we never laugh about them. They are our heroes. This is very important. There are many comedians who make jokes about his public, about his volunteers. That's not our style. So when we have volunteers, they are involved. They have a good time on the stage with us. And when they leave the stage, they become a big applause. They are heroes. They're not the one we are laughing about. We are laughing with them. That's important. But when a man is afraid about his hair and he's really afraid, this is hard to laugh and to make jokes. So you need to be serious and really say, okay, I'm sorry, we didn't know that in our characters, and go on with the show.
Yes. Yeah, it's good to be careful, because when you mentioned in stand-up comedy, that I see all the time when I'm there in person, let's say, or I watch some videos online, the performer is a lot of the times joking with the audience in the front row, but of course it's satiric, but it's more in a bad way. They're trying to, let's say, expose their bad way. Oh, look how your hair is.
Yes.
And then make a joke about that. So that's different with you.
Exactly. This is not our style. This is not our office philosophy. And that's why in our genre, the people like us. Yeah. We had one time, we played a show 9 times. 9 years, every year, the same event, we played the same show. After the third or fourth time, we said, hey, let's do another thing. No, I want to have this show, please. I like it. And after the 9th year, there were so many people in the public who saw our show for us for so many years. They talk with us. So we have text. This is always the same, and we have improvised text. But the text, what is the same, they shout inside. So it was funny. We start to say something and people finished the sentences. I think it's when a musician is on the stage and the people are singing the text. It was the same with us. But after the 9 year, we said, okay, we have to stop. I'm sorry. It was funny, but the next time it won't be funny anymore.
So you changed it a little bit, even if the promoters want the same show.
Sometimes we can change, sometimes we're not. But on this special place, we said next year you have to look for another show group. We don't come anymore. It's enough. We had a great time. But please,
there are many. Time to move forward.
Yes, and there are many other artists. And of course, we have so many nice colleagues with very good shows. And we are not concurrence. What is concurrence in English?
Competition.
Competition, yeah. There's so many different kind of events and it need to fit on the festival, you need to fit on the events. And we have colleagues I recommend when I've been to a festival and I think, oh, this would be perfect for him and him. I recognize, of course, we are working together. We are talking about our jobs. So we are not in a competition.
So you're in a pretty healthy environment, would you say?
Yes.
With your specific niche of the entertainment.
That's what I like. Yes, not to be in a competition, but in a good way with my colleagues. And
how do you determine if there's a good fit between a specific performance that you do and the type of the event that you go? Because I saw you can go to festivals, let's say music festivals, family festivals, or even business events. What would you say to somebody, let's say I'm a corporate owner and I want to have the caveman on one of my business events? What would you advise me?
Mm-hmm. We work on both. We work on festivals. On festivals, you can be real artist performer. Normally you do what you like to do, of course. And in the event business, gala business, you are also a kind of service provider. But there's a border. I mean, when the people ask me to come with the gentleman to an event, we talk before, okay, why you like to have the gentleman? What do you think they're good for? And I ask a very important question: when your guests on the event, when they leave, what should they take them with them? So most events have a motto, have a kind of dramaturgy. When the people leave, they go and become a message, simple message. The product is very good. It's a very good team. They are very sustainable. They are very, they have many offers for the future, very different kinds of impressions and messages. So I think, okay, we can be a part of this message. For example, I like examples. A big truck developer, MAN, they have big trucks and they built a new truck. It's 15 years ago. And they present the trucks to very special guests. And they booked the gentleman because the gentleman symbolize strength, big man.
Yes.
Same like trucks. So we surrounded the trucks, but we also act as normal. We don't have to. We wouldn't talk. as gentlemen, because that's not our, this makes the character completely, they smash the character. But we talked to the event manager. We said, okay, we can play the gentleman. What else can we do? We have small cards. On one card, as I told you, my face with a bodybuilder. And so we developed, we thought, okay, what kind of cards can we do to bring the gentleman together with the trucks? And this is a kind of event, a kind of service providing from us combined with performance. And it's no problem for us because we, I don't know how to tell in English. Wir müssen uns nicht verbiegen. We don't, I don't have to be, it's...
Yeah,
it's
so stiff. You have to adapt to the concept.
Yes, yes. Sometimes the people want, okay, we like to book the gentleman and you can give out giveaways for this, for this, for this. And we say, no, the gentleman can't give away. So I can take a giveaway, for example, gummy beers. But I can give them, but in our way. When there's a nice woman, I kiss the gummy bears and I give it. I flirt with her, of course, but in a very, very slow way. So if you want me to give a hundred of giveaways to the public, I said, no, sorry, it's not possible. I can give maybe every some minutes, I can give one, but in an acting art. So that's the way of the gentleman. And I keep the way of our characters, man-based characters.
It needs to be a core to your character, which you can then adapt to a certain experience or where you are.
Exactly, yes. But it's all, yes, but we always, we are in a good way that our programs are very, has strong characters. The caveman has strong characters, the gentleman, also the circus show, the herd of mechanical creatures, for example. We are herdsmen, we are shepherds, strong shepherds. So we are always strong men, and we are not clothing in some other costumes and doing things we don't like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
very interesting.
So sometimes you have to find a balance, a border between service provider and actor, but mm-hmm. we are service providers in the business event, but always with our characters.
Okay, so I have two more questions which I'm interested in.
Please.
So yeah, I want to go back a little to the beginning of our conversation when you mentioned you have brainstorms and where ideas are popping and there's never ending flood of ideas. Can you please tell more a little bit about how your brainstorming sessions look like? And then next step, how do you implement a new idea?
Mm-hmm. The first thing you need to know, we are traveling a lot. And normally we're traveling with a car, with a transporter, because we have a lot of requisites, a lot of stuff, a lot of props. And when we drive many hours, we do a lot of brainstorming. And I think it's never a problem to have ideas. And some ideas we are going with it for many years. And it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. This is the first thing, the traveling, of course. And
spending time together.
Spending time together, exactly. Spending time together. And also we are working with tools. For example, with tools in the internet where you can write ideas with different boards. We have a page with different boards different ideas. And when you have an idea, you go there with your app on the handy and write the idea down. And my colleagues see the idea and write the next sentence to it. So it becomes bigger and bigger. And sometimes in the year, we meet all together. We are working on an idea. Maybe it fits, maybe not. And our Erfahrung is every 3-4 years, a new idea becomes alive. And then we are working on it, mostly in the winter time. And right now we are working on an idea. It's new. It's only half year old. It was very fast. We have the props together, and now we are working on minimal spaces, how to fill the idea. But we have no, it was so fast, we said, okay, no, we have to stop it for a while. We don't present it this year. We want to present it next year, 2026, because it was a little bit too fast.
What was too fast exactly?
The program was too fast. We tried it already out. We've been outside. On some things it works, on something it works, it doesn't work. But now, from April till this year, will be a very busy year for us. So we said, okay, we have to stop it. There are other projects, and mm-hmm. next winter we are working on it again. There's no hurry. Exactly.
Are you able to hint us a little bit of what this new performance is, or is it going to be a complete surprise in your portfolio?
No, it's a surprise. We are not talking about not ready ideas. That's not good. Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
Another idea, for example, when we create the herd of mechanical creatures, we built around about 4 or 5 years on it. We made bicycles. We made a kind of robotic animals built out of old bicycles. So, so we taught bicycles how to walk. And we built 4 or 5 years on it till it works. The first version had a problem with the motor. It becomes too hot. Then some parts break. Then the change doesn't fit very well. So then it becomes some child problems, but after 4 or 5 years, we said, okay, now it's really good. We can go out everywhere on festivals and business events. We can go out and we act and we play with it without problems. And so this was a very long time, long term working on an idea.
So you also do a lot of testing before you actually go out there and start performing in person.
Yeah. And there are also, there are a lot of possibilities for testing. Also at home in Munich, where we have our rehearsal room, we go out there and try out.
And do you have like a testing crowd? You say, okay, bring all of your friends this Saturday. We are testing new things, and then you see if it's funny or not.
We did this one time. It was funny.
How did it go?
It was funny because our friends love what we do. And the second time we tried out in front of a normal public, and it doesn't work.
Okay. So you think your friends were just laughing to
exactly
make it feel good? Okay.
They love what we do, but the real public didn't laugh. They said, "Oh no, it's not ready. Please go back to the rehearsal room next time." Yeah, but
you learned a lot still.
We learned a lot, and that's you don't have to be afraid of going out and trying out. Of course, when you're real booked, you have to deliver, of course. But you'll never be booked with a program what is not ready, of course. And I won't sell a program, an unready program, of course.
And do you still, after these years of performing, do you still have the fear you mentioned inside, or is it just like completely gone now?
You mean the fear of trying out, or the fear into being in front of the public? What do you mean?
More the first one, the fear of trying something out and being afraid that it will fail and there's going to be like an awkward silence.
No, I'm not afraid.
You just got it.
Yes, I'm not afraid to fail. Even if it's real conditions, you need to try out. You won't get better if you try out. But as I said, I wouldn't sell a program when it's not ready. So when I sell a program, when it's listed on the homepage, or when I go into a fair with the program is ready. Yeah. And then I'm not afraid of it, and there's no fear. And in the tryout, in the beginning, what happens? People don't laugh, or the people said, oh, it's not interesting, but that's okay. Learning by doing sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So this leads, I think, nicely into my last question. And this would be, during these 25 years of performing, or even more, what's the best lesson you learned about yourself as a person?
I think the best lesson is to take yourself not so seriously. And that's real. It's so good to give a small message to the public, but we are a big team. Don't take so seriously yourself. You're not in the middle of the earth. You're not the important person. So I'm part of many projects. I'm part of my program. I'm part of Full Pool. I'm part of the society. And even if I have to give a small message, if I can make some people's laugh, it's great. And during the Corona time, we built a new format. We go out, for example, on very big houses. The people watched a show from their flat or from the balcony, for example. And after, they go out with mask, separated from us, but we played shows. We go to the people. That's what we did in Munich. And we played on places without any cultural things. So it was a place where no culture has been played before. For example, really big houses. And we became a new public there. So, for example, old people who can't go out anymore to the theater, or young people, 13, 14, 15, who would never go to a festival, but they come to us because we go to them. And they were very rude in the beginning with us. We came with our trailer, start with the performance, and the 15-year-old people, they shout and were very rude. But as long as we played, they were more and more interested. And after, they said, wow, this was great. I never thought old people can do that.
So you were performing on the street and people were watching from the balconies and from windows.
Yes, exactly.
During Corona.
Yes. During Corona. And directly after Corona, we did the same in front of the houses. So the people came out. We played a circus show. We took a chow color, make a ring, and a family can go in the ring. Then 2 meters away, the next ring, the next family. And that's how we start directly in Corona, making shows for the public, for the people. And in this time, there were nothing. The theaters were closed. The cinemas were closed. And the people loved it to go out in a way what they can do. And looking our shows, of course, with masks and with distance, everything. So we played in front of sometimes 50, sometimes 100, sometimes 200 people. And we became a new public, not the event public, not the cultural public who go to the theater, the normal people from the street, foreigners, Munich, everywhere. And we make them laugh, we give them hope, and we bring them together. And this was a great experience while Corona. So, yeah, that's what I
think. It's a good message. I think it's a good message and a good story.
Yeah, thank you.
So, yeah, Pico, thanks a lot. Where can people find you? Where can people book you? Where can they speak to you?
They can find us in the internet, of course, at our homepage.
www. I will put up links below.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. And they can find us in festivals. They can find us on the street. For example, as you find me on a fair, normally there are three big fairs for artists in Germany: the cultural fair in Freiburg, the event fair Best of Events in Dortmund, and the Future Festival fair in Berlin. And sometimes, not every year, we are there with a booth, talking to the people, networking, making new contacts. This is the other thing. It's nice to be an artist, but it's also, it's hard work also. Not only hard work to make a new program, also to sell it. And me for myself, I'm sitting 30, 40 hours a week in the office to organize, or to make the organization a full pool with the different jobs, different gigs, and so on. Yes, but that's what I like to do. That's what I like to do. These are my two faces, to be an artist when I'm on tour and to be the businessman when I'm in the office.
Yeah, there's a lot more to entertainment that goes on behind the scenes than just seeing the performance. That's also what we are doing right now.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You're telling us a little bit of your background, because I also worked in events. I did logistics and I'm also doing booking, so I can completely understand what you mean.
Yes,
no.
But it's
setting the dates, looking locations, trying to figure it out, making all the puzzles come together.
Yeah. Yes, but it's a good work. It's a good work.
Yeah. Cool. So we will link you anywhere around the videos. And again, thanks a lot for taking the time. I hope you liked it.
Okay, yeah.
And
thank you very much, David, to giving me the chance to talk about Full Pool, about our programs, and see you next time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you.